Welcome to Charting New Paths in Pre-K to 12 Education, a podcast by Solution Tree. In our authors segment, we invite our new and best-selling authors published by Solution Tree to share their expertise and valuable insights with you. Listen to this segment and add another tool in your toolbox of research to firm classroom-ready strategies to improve student outcomes. I'm your host, Prisma Lopez-Marine. Enjoy today's episode. Hello, everyone. In today's episode, the book we'll be talking about is titled Leveraging the Impact of Culture and Climate, Deep, Significant, and Lasting Change in Classrooms and Schools. This book provides educators and school leaders with a framework for understanding and assessing culture and climate at the school levels and as well as the classroom levels. The authors clarify that while culture and climate are strongly connected, they are two separate concepts, and educators should understand each fully to engage in effective school improvement. We are joined by the authors of this book, Dr. Steve Grunert and Dr. Todd Whitaker. It's great to have you both. Thank you for joining me for this episode.
We're honored. Very excited and looking forward to it.
This is going to be fun.
Now, before we get into our conversation about the book, tell us about your background in your pre-K to 12 roles as teachers and principals, and also in your current roles in higher education.
Well, I am currently in my 20th year at Indiana State University, which is not really a small university, but we're in Terre Haute, Indiana, which is about an hour west of Indianapolis. I teach in the Ed Leadership Department, and I currently also work with the Indiana Principal Leadership Institute, which is something the state has about 2013 started funding. I served as an administrator in Missouri back in, I think I started in 1993 and went until 2001. Then I had the opportunity to come back to Indiana.
Excellent. And I'm in Missouri. I started out as a math teacher and basketball coach, and then I became a high school principal and a varsity boys and varsity girls basketball coach at the same time in a small school, as you can imagine. Then I had the opportunity to be a middle school and junior high principal, and then worked at a central office and administration opening new middle schools. And then I was at Indiana State University, and that's one of the places Steve and I had the chance to work together. And now I'm at the University of Missouri in the Educational Leadership Department.
Great. Thank you for letting us know more about you. So as current practitioners in education, what can you tell us about your expertise that powered the writing of this book?
I don't have any expertise, which is why I wrote the book with Steve. So Steve, why don't you share your expertise on culture and climate, and we'll kind of go from there.
Don't let him fool you. Actually, back in 1996, when I first started working on my dissertation, my graduate advisor, mentor, and good friend, Jerry Valentine at the University of Missouri, who I might say has the same relationship with Todd, he handed me a book called Corporate Cultures and said, I'd like for you to learn a little bit about this, because we were building a school improvement program. And he thought that school culture was going to be a big issue in the future, and asked me to build my expertise on it. And since 1996, I have not stopped. I have been quite obsessed with school culture and school climate, just, you know, why people act the way they do in any kind of a setting. We've got rules no matter where you go, but it seems as though there's something else going on driving people's behaviors. So I've just been excited about that. I continue to write, continue to consult, and continue to just watch anytime I get a chance to see leaders do their things and watch how organizations respond.
Yeah.
And I've had the good fortune, a couple of things that I've written that seem to resonate with people are what great teachers do differently and what great principals do differently. And that links with culture and climate, because the things we're trying to figure out is, how come in this school things go so well and so smoothly? And how come in this school, it seems like there's always dysfunction? How come in this classroom, this takes place, and in the same school, literally next door, that it's completely different environment? And that's part of what it is they do differently, if that makes any sense. And then we're looking at how does that affect culture and climate, the fact that people approach things in such differing manners.
Thank you. It's definitely interesting to hear your passion about both concepts. Could you share with us how you both know each other?
Well, I'd be glad to share how we actually met. It was at the National Middle School Association Conference in October of 2001. And this was in Washington, D.C., 2 weeks after 9/11. So everything was a little creepy and people were a little scared to go to conferences. But I went, I took some teachers, and I saw Todd Whitaker in the bulletin, and it said University of Missouri. And Indiana State University, and me being from Indiana, I was really curious to go in and listen. And I listened to him, and afterwards I had to stop him and we got to talking, and he mentioned University of Missouri. And it was actually at that conversation, he told me that they had an opening. And so I went ahead and applied, and 2 months later I got the interview, and the next year I was working at ISU. It's been a pleasure working with Todd, because I have a tendency with especially with culture to get too conceptual. It's a fuzzy topic to begin with, and I can come across as a boring scientist, if you will, at times. And he has a gift of being able to connect theory to real life. And that's just something I struggle with. And one last benefit of working with Todd is his wife, Beth. She's a very brilliant educator and researcher. And whenever I have the chance to visit with them, I'll always ask her advice.
Steve thought it was creepy because it was 2 weeks after a 9/11. It was really creepy because it was me, but he didn't know the difference there. And Steve literally transformed the department at Indiana State, and in a very positive way, in terms of much more thoughtful practice, much more research focus, much more looking at things objectively. And it really has taken that department to a new level. And then Steve is the creator of the Indiana Principal Leadership Institute. And it's an incredible thing that the state has. There's no other state that has anything as comparable as that. And it's literally because of Steve's direction, which is truly an amazing thing that the state of Indiana and their schools and school leaders are blessed to be a part of.
Well, actually, probably 2 years prior, they had something they did for principals in Indiana, but it didn't have a lot of accountability, especially toward the school. It was just a time for some good people just to hang out and have some conversations. And I felt as though it was necessary to bring something like that back, but in a more research-oriented type activity, to where people actually had to create things and show their peers and work with teachers and try to improve their schools. We brought several of us from the department brought some ideas to the legislators there in Indiana, and in 2013 they decided this was good to go, and I think we are currently working on our cohort number 9.
That's really great. Congratulations on executing something so monumental and definitely needed for leadership growth.
To show how significant it was, I'm somebody who's a risk taker, and I think anything's possible. And when Steve brought it up, I thought to myself, there's no way it's possible. There's no way it can happen. And I didn't tell him that. And it just shows what somebody with Steve's capability can bring to the entire state.
As much as people might talk about it, it did start as a drawing on a napkin.
It wasn't the same napkin the Gettysburg Address was written on, but it's the same idea.
Yes, exactly. A new napkin for leadership. Could you both share with us the significance of working on this book together?
I think there's a couple of things. One is there's always been a wrestling with culture and climate and the difference in this. And one of the things that Steve has, has accepted more the role of climate in terms of impacting culture. And I think the other thing about this book that I was particularly interested in is thinking of culture and climate at the classroom level as well as at the school level. And I think that's very important, because that's great to be in an organization and know this is the culture of the organization, but you also want to know, what does that have to do with me? What does that have to do with me as an individual? What if I really can't impact it? Well, at the classroom level, the individual teacher can impact that and obviously is the main driver on the culture and climate within a classroom. And so I think that was one of the things that was exciting. And then obviously looking at the linkage between the two. But for me, that was one of the things that was most appealing.
Yeah, and one of the chapters in there that I'm especially excited about is the capacity for change. And that is something that I have probably been working on since I got to ISU, maybe 20 years ago, is the idea that some schools, some leaders might try to actually change something when their school doesn't have the capacity to change. Mm-hmm. And so rather than waste your time and look silly, I thought there might be a way that we could actually assess a building, an organization, to determine if they are mentally and structurally ready to move forward with the next change. And that's what we tried to create in that chapter. And I'm looking forward to feedback from the field on that.
For sure. So speaking of the concepts, in order to dive into the book's purpose, what do you expect to accomplish with this book? And then why focus on climate and culture now?
I would probably argue the biggest reason is that people still get them confused. And they might feel as though if we work on the climate of the building and people start feeling better, they've actually fixed the problems. And I would argue that, you know, you've simply given people aspirin to fix their virus, and we might feel better, but the problem is still there. And can we actually get down to the root of the problem and start addressing that? I'm also concerned these days with the degree to which people address school culture change, as if it's just another thing on the list of things to do, treating it as a fad, treating it as, well, we'll just focus on that this year. And to me, it's brain surgery. It might be one of the last things that you try to do if your school is suffering. It isn't something that you just tinker with once in a while.
Yeah.
And I think also when you think about the things, when I talked about it, I look at things as how do people do things differently? And we look at culture and climate. Well, we are in, when you think about the pandemic that's taken place, how come some schools were able to, and success isn't the right word, but how come some schools can come through that stronger? And others, it really tears at their very core and fabric. How come whenever some teachers went virtual, they were able to maintain a dynamic within their classroom, and others, it became an almost non-existent learning environment? And so those are the things that I think the thing about culture and climate is they really are timeless. They're sort of evergreen, and that they always impact what we do. And when we have something like a pandemic, when we have a regular school year, they still differentiate more successful and less successful building schools and classrooms, as well as districts.
So I like the example that you provide in regards to the pandemic. I really do appreciate the book's description of the difference of culture and climate with scenarios and examples of daily life experiences. So why has it become so common to use these terms, culture and climate interchangeably? As your book points out,
I think that it's because there isn't an understanding of the difference. I don't think there's anything mean-spirited about it. I don't think there's anything at all. But if it's something that you don't really understand the concepts, you just use them interchangeably. You know, you just do that. There's a lot of things that we treat like that. And I think culture and climate, and there is some connectivity. So it isn't like they're taking things that are polar opposites and using them interchangeably. It's just, culture is such a popular, trendy word right now that I think we'd like to use that lens over everything. Well, climate is much. They're both important. So it's not saying one isn't, but climate is simpler to change. Well, I'd love to use them interchangeably because I can do something simple that affects the climate. I can pretend it's the culture, and then I meet the need of everything that's taking place now. And so that's what I think a lot of it is just, a lot of times we change the climate and we wish it was the culture.
Another thing that I did notice, and I was very interested in something you both mentioned in a conversation we had previously, that there's a difference of culture in classrooms that also is separate from culture in schools. Can you tell us more about that?
I will briefly state, and then I will let Todd elaborate because he has a better explanation. But I come at it from a research scientific perspective in that if it's difficult to assign culture status to a classroom if we accept the idea that it takes more than one person and several years to build a culture. If we go with that, then it's not a culture, but we all know there's something happening. And it looks like culture. Mm-hmm. It feels like culture. We know there's a climate there, but there is this unique identity that happens in each classroom. And they have their own expectations and their own unwritten rules.
And think about this. In a school, you can predict every year which teacher will send the most kids to the office, even though their student makeup is completely different. You can predict which teachers are going to be the ones that the students most wish they had, even though every year their classroom makeup is different. And it's because that teacher is the biggest impactor on the culture of that classroom. And they're going to be different than other teachers. And even though to a teacher, it's interesting, even though to a teacher, they feel like the makeup of this class is way different than last year's, or even at the secondary level, the difference between first hour is different than second hour. What they may not understand is their class is still more like last year, their own class last year, than it is the teacher next door to them's class this year, if that makes any sense. The best teacher typically is the most effective teacher year to year to year to year. They see their class differently because the makeup of the class is different, but the culture they provide is very stable. A teacher that struggles year to year to year to year, they have classes that they feel are a little better or a little more challenging or, you know, what a little brighter or a little more struggling, but yet their classes look an awful lot alike year to year to year to year. And the same way when you think of a high school teacher who may have six classes during the day, first hour may be different than second hour, and it may be different than third hour. But compared to the other teachers, first hour is a lot like second hour, is a lot like third hour, because they have a culture that they've created in there that sets the dynamic more so than the school culture causes all teachers to be ineffective, or the school culture causes all teachers to be effective, because it doesn't. It's still, there's an individual control of the teacher because they become the most significant player in that classroom environment.
Wow. I really appreciate that connection between the teacher being the main impact. And yes, absolutely. The teacher is the main influence for their classrooms. So one of the main points from the book that I learned in regards to school effectiveness and improvement, how imperative is it for school leadership and for teachers who are the primary influence of students, as you mentioned, to not just understand, but to also assess culture and climate?
Steve's the assessment guy.
Well, in a nutshell, we need to know the type of culture we have relative to the one that we want. Okay. And so assessing the culture by whatever means you use, and climate plays the biggest role in that assessment, is the only way to know, to recognize that gap between where you are and where you want to be.
Right.
Yeah. It's, you know, and if you're talking about culture, then again, I go back to the brain surgery thing. Don't just tinker around with it and see if, you know, make a few changes here and there and see if you can change the culture. It's more of a concerted effort. It takes a strong commitment whenever you're going to do that.
Yeah. And the other reason to assess it is we only know what we know. Mm-hmm. And to a teacher, their class looks like their class. And potentially they could think, my class looks like all the other classes. But if they're not in all the other classes, the only thing they can know is their class. And I always say, this sounds so unusual. Teaching is the most isolated profession there is, and yet you're never alone. but you don't have any other adults interacting with you in that classroom environment on a regular basis. And the school leader, and you know, if you're in an organization long enough, whether it's a publishing company, whether it's a school, you begin to think that this is the only environment I'm aware of. This is the only thing I know. Thus, it's hard for me to compare that to other places. And even if you do, there's a difference between living in that environment, you know, teaching there for 180 days a year versus walking into your different school if you just go to visit or if your child is there. And so I think that's one of the reasons the assessment is to have some neutrality in terms of how am I compared to my vision of how I am, especially because culture and climate, like Steve had mentioned, really are in your head. That's really where they exist. And so that makes it more troubling or more difficult to assess if you don't really get some neutrality in your way of measuring.
All right, so let's take a look back at your previous roles in leadership, education leadership as former principals. Were these conversations on this topic different compared to now? And then also, have the conversations evolved or improved to move schools forward?
For me, the conversations may have been similar. We just weren't using those words, you know, but it really is. One of the words I always use is effectiveness. You know, how effective are all the teachers? How effective are we in terms of this? And sometimes, and one of the things that Steve and I say, and, you know, it's like a lot of things I say, it seems like I'm joking, but there's enough truth in it that it actually is true. If you want to change the culture, many times the two words you should never say are change in culture. Because if the culture gets threatened, it gets stronger and thus more difficult to change. So I think there's an awareness, because back then they used to also talk more about vision, which I think still is a piece of this, you know, that I can envision what I want my class to be like. I can envision what I want my school to be like. And those are critical components if you think about culture and climate, because then you have the vision of what you hope the culture would be at the classroom or school level, and you can compare it to the classroom or school level as what it actually is. And so that's a way, I think, to do that without necessarily using the words of the day, if that makes any sense, of which culture is definitely one of those words that's trendy, even though the cultural concept isn't the least bit trendy. It's as entrenched as anything we have in society.
Yeah, I'm finding that more leaders are realizing how the values and beliefs of their people and themselves emerge, evolve, and influence their productivity, and influence all the systems that happen to be in the school, and probably more importantly, how the principal's values and beliefs can facilitate or inhibit the improvement efforts. That's probably what I'm finding, is that, you know, this is the soft, fuzzy stuff. We're talking about people's emotions and what they bring to the table and the affect of their day. And so the idea that you have to take that in consideration might not have worked 50, 40 years ago. But now the best leaders understand that, I think, these days, and they're talking about it and they're interested in how they might be able to manage with it.
One of my favorite truths is you have two ways to improve your schools: hire better teachers and improve the ones you have. Well, what I was really trying to do with that is, and I always say, when you hire a new teacher, your goal is to have your school become more like your new teacher, not to have your new teacher become like your school. Well, if you think about it, that's really related to culture. Because I'm, you know, if my culture's here, whatever that means, I'm trying to hire someone whose belief system, whose approach, whose effectiveness is here. And I need them. I want to help them. I want them to help us move the culture toward them versus them moving toward the culture. I think that the belief systems are the same. It's just there's an easier way to understand and explain and describe it now.
Yeah, that's a great explanation. And we find that in the past, often when leaders were interviewing for teachers, they were looking for somebody who fit in. Yeah. And when you hire people who fit in, nothing really changes. And so, like Todd says, we're looking for that spark to come in and give people permission to act differently.
And then you have to think, what can I do to support them? What can I do to link them up with people who are in the existing organization to begin that movement in a positive direction? No matter where we're at, even if we're doing great, can we become even more effective? Can we move in even a more of a positive direction? It's not, you're not doing that because people are the place is ineffective, you're doing that no matter what, that I'm bringing people in to help move us. I always say, you know, our goal is not to reflect society. Our goal is to cultivate society. And that's what we have to do as educators. And so that's the same way in a school. My goal is not to reflect the school. My goal when I bring someone in is to help cultivate the school in a positive direction. Even if we're moving quickly and we're moving in a good direction, I want somebody to speed it up and I want somebody to, you know, to give us even more of a boost to move in a more positive way, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And I love that idea about moving the culture to the new educators so that in it advancing towards the future in our current and future generations as well. Everything is ever evolving. So that makes sense. Yeah.
You try to groom your new teachers. That means matching them up with your veteran best teachers. And occasionally, you know, from my perspective as a scientist, that's how you get schools better and that's how they become worse. It's if when your new teachers show up and the negative toxic teachers are the first ones to take them to lunch and they have the opportunity to share with them, this is how we do things around here. Mm-hmm. And if the leadership just lets that happen, then we're pretty sure that the school is not going to do well.
Another thing, how can this book help our listeners?
Well, I'd like to think that we're stimulating conversations about how a school can improve and provide the factors that matter when a school is trying to improve. We hope leaders begin to understand the level of effort that's needed and commitment to actually change a culture and how they might start with the climate.
You know, we think about teacher efficacy as one of the things that people feel like has a significant impact on teacher effectiveness. And one of the purposes of the book is to help people at the building level and people in the classroom level to realize I really can make a difference. I really am the factor that can be the most important factor, not in terms of going it alone, but in terms of realizing, oh, here's a path that I can do to implement, to make my school move in a positive direction, to be more successful in a classroom. And I think even the realization that it really is me, that it isn't the commissioner of education, it isn't state legislatures, it isn't people on radio talk shows, it really is me. And I'm really the deciding factor. That can be scary, but it can also be very empowering to realize I do have the ability to positively impact my classroom and my school. And that's a gift we hope to give.
Absolutely. In addition to that, then what advice on how to start these conversations with guidance of this book from teachers to leadership and then vice versa in order to start these conversations?
Well, I think what's interesting is if they are not working together, it's probably because the culture doesn't want them to. There are probably plenty of schools out there where the teachers and leaders are working together. I can attest to that through the IPLI experiences that we provide. And that might be one of the reasons, again, to why you want to look at the culture of your school, because it determines whether or not people are allowed to have conversations and to talk about school improvement and what tools you have in your toolbox and how they're supposed to be used.
Yeah. And I think confidence and trust, if the principal trusts the teachers and has the confidence to listen to the feedback they provide, that's amazing information for the principal to use as they try to move the school forward. If we can be willing to show our vulnerability, to show our imperfections, mm-hmm. to ask for guidance and help, there's nothing that can move us forward quicker than that. But it does take people with some willingness to share imperfections. And to admit we're not exactly where we want to be, that doesn't mean we're not moving in that direction, but we're not where we want to be, and let's learn from each other. You know, one of the beauties of this is if the faculty and staff read the book and the principal reads the book and they share together, what happens is the knowledge of one becomes the knowledge of all. And that really is a powerful environment to be able to influence the culture and climate in a classroom or in an organization. And the same way, the teacher is going to have to show some vulnerability to try to get feedback from their students.
Exactly.
What can I do? What did I do incorrectly? Did this make sense? Did I approach this? Was I too rude when I shared this? Do I need to apologize? all of those things allow us to get better.
Yeah, I think we're trying to build a school where teachers talk about school improvement when they don't have to.
Yeah.
And the word on the street becomes, if you apply for this school, be prepared to work hard and to be effective.
Hmm. I always say, come to my school because you have a chance to make a difference. And that's what good people want. They want to make a difference. That's why they chose education.
So that's a great perspective, absolutely. Having a blueprint to then analyze strategies to do a long-term approach. I like that. Now, lastly, because you both have extensive experience on this topic and as current practitioners in education, do you ever wonder about the results teachers and administrators come up with by using the strategies mentioned in this book?
I would be excited to get any kind of feedback from the field as far as how any of these activities might be generating conversations and helping them to take a few steps forward. You know, you could send me an email and I'd be happy to look at some of the data and maybe have even some conversations with the leadership and talk about next steps.
We'd love it. And my website's toddwhitaker.com. I don't have any people. Steve and I are both on Twitter. I'm at Todd Whitaker. He's at Steve Grunert. And we would love your feedback, love questions. And it as much as you feel like it might help your learning, it helps our learning too. And we just appreciate you taking a look and would love to hear what you say. We care about schools. That's why we do this stuff. We care about the students. We care about the teachers and we care about the leaders. And anything we can do to be supportive, that's what we're for.
That was great. Thank you so much, Steve and Todd, for just this in-depth conversation about these concepts, about the book in general, and just having our listeners getting to know you more and learn about your passion for education. We appreciate your time. Thank you. We do recommend this book as another tool for your toolbox with teaching and your professional development. Whether you're a new teacher or you've been a teacher for several years, this book can definitely guide pre-K through 12 educators to discover just how to develop and sustain a collaborative culture and promoting that learning for all. So look for the book, Leveraging the Impact of Culture and Climate. It is available in our Solution Tree website, solutiontree.com, and then wherever books are sold as well. At Solution Tree, we share your vision to transform education, and we can help you make this vision a reality. No other professional learning company provides our unique blend of research-based, results-driven services that improve learning outcomes for all students. Thank you for tuning in, and make sure to check us out at solutiontree.com/podcast for upcoming episodes. Thank you for joining us.